Thing.
Bishop on air. Good morning to those joining the chat room this early. Oscar, Brian, Edward, Huckleberry, John, Daniel, Till Valhalla, Ed, Bullenfish 25, Christopher, Friedman, Brock. Appreciate you guys being here, Jerry. Good morning, Eduardo. Like seeing everybody. Huckleberry says, I gold tomorrow. Rawhide, good morning. No quarter. ASX. AS3SXP. We'll get that right one of these days. All right, guys, we got a couple of things to tackle here. One, we'll look at some of the conversations that were happening at the Illinois State House yesterday, including gun control groups there promoting legislation to address cold cases when there are homicides. And law enforcement groups kind of pushing back on that. Also, a conversation about hate speech at the Capitol, especially with the ongoing tensions of protesters in the streets siding with Palestine over Israel, and reaction from the Anti-Defamation League looking at what this forecasts for the DNC this August in Chicago. But up next, we got to talk about reaction from some in the firearms industry to the ideas of requiring training and background checks and safety and a whole host of other things. So that's coming up next here with Bishop on Air. I'm Greg Bishop. Thanks for hanging out. Like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell. And brief breather. We'll be right back. Training and even the idea of safety regulations when it comes to firearms ownership and the Second Amendment. It's on top of a lot of people's minds as we've got legislation proposed at the Illinois State House dealing with these things. And I was able to connect with a couple of individuals from cashforarms.com, Matt Miller and Fern Trujillo, and we discussed a variety of things and what exactly it means when the Biden administration goes to expand background checks, the push to have state mandated and state sanctioned training for gun buyers, and even questions about safe storage and the like. So let's get on into it. Matt Miller, he is the CEO for cashforarms.com, and we also connected with Fern Trujillo, who is a retired law enforcement officer. They both explain themselves, who they are, and where they're coming at from the Second Amendment space.
Yeah, thanks. So Matt Miller, CEO here at MCM Retail Group, which is the owner of firearmland.com and cashforarms.com. We're America's largest used gun buyer and seller, really a highly specialized company that helps process a lot of used guns every day for resale. And by doing so, then, you know, we're very focused on firearm safety and community safety around the country. And one of the benefits of our business model is that we bring in a lot of used guns that people want to sell and otherwise might not have great options to sell them. And we're able to bring those guns into the legal system as opposed to having a lot of, you know, street level transactions in communities where private party sales are legal. We're very focused on safety here. And, But we're also big proponents of the Second Amendment and, you know, Americans' right to keep and bear arms. So we try to balance those two things with, you know, kind of a common sense approach to safety.
So that's Matt. We also talked with Fern, who is a retired law enforcement officer.
I am currently the new business manager here at Firearm Land Cash for Arms. My goal is to reach out to federal firearm licensees and establish relationships with them. And establish new business that way. I'm also a retired law enforcement officer, firearms instructor, trainer, armorer, and been pretty much around guns well over 40 years.
So clearly these two individuals have a lot of experience in this space. I'm glad I was able to connect with them. And I asked them about firearm background checks, and in particular, the Biden administration announcing that they're expanding firearm background checks. All of this while Illinoisans were the most background checked individuals in the country in 2023.
Yeah, so I think in this case, the rule is designed to expand background check requirements for any person who is engaged in the business, is what the language they use, right? Engaged in the business of selling firearms. And this is kind of at the heart of a long growing debate over, you know, what is a gun dealer and you know, sort of what separates that person from someone who just wants to sell private firearms, you know, on the open market. And so it's kind of the gun show debate, if you will, where people feel like they can go to gun shows and sell guns, but they're not a dealer, so they don't have to perform background checks under federal law. To me, you know, as an FFL, I do think it's important to have background checks for gun buyers. In Illinois, obviously, having a second state background check. And then with, I think there's current proposed legislation in Illinois for even adding a third background check. That seems to me to be kind of asinine, and I don't get the point of that. You know, it's an example of an area of law where there's already a restriction in place under federal law, and we see a lot of what appears to be more kind of political grandstanding and patting, you know, the gun control lobby on the back for passing the same types of laws, in some cases exactly the same requirements at state or local levels. And I think when you look at guns crime statistics across the board and in states like Illinois, where, you know, you have some of the most restrictive gun laws in the country, you don't see a manifestation like an improvement of gun safety through those efforts.
I think a lot of Illinoisans feel that, especially knowing that the state's the most background checked state in the country in 2023. But yet the headlines out of Chicago continue to mount of violent crime and lives being taken. Fern, being a former law enforcement officer, his take on background checks.
I come from New Jersey originally, a state that has dual background checks. The issue, in my opinion, is the background checks, what they call the background check loophole, is overly exaggerated. Law enforcement as a whole is not against firearms ownership. We are for rightful firearm ownership. We want the right people to own firearms. Background checks do help if they're run properly. The problem that Illinois is trying to do is they're trying to basically keep firearms away from citizens in any way possible. They're trying to make it stricter and stricter for people to get their hands on a firearm by implementing a second and or a third background check. Basically, at what point does the system and the process get so restrictive that people just give up on it? To further that, Illinois wants to lock up all guns from owners. In other words, make owners lock up their firearms at all times. The issue in Illinois is the criminals don't care about locking up their weapons. They don't care about further laws or any background checks or anything of that nature. So what they are essentially doing in Illinois is preventing the rightful citizen who has a firearm from using it to defend his or herself.
Again, I had a conversation with Matt Miller and Fern Trujillo from cashforarms.com about a variety of things, from background checks to even the issue of education and some laws that are being proposed in Illinois would require training, but not just any kind of training. It would require state-sanctioned training. And Miller talking about how, training is important. Education is important.
It's, I think firearms education is American, part of the American history and our culture historically. It's changed in recent years, but it wasn't that many years ago that many Americans as school children got firearms education and awareness. There were shooting clubs and in schools and high schools, colleges and universities had, sporting programs that embraced firearms education. I think building a pro-gun culture, we certainly have a gun culture in this country, right? Even a lot of the liberals that love to want to, hate guns and ban guns are the same ones that control Hollywood and music entertainment, where guns are glorified, all the time to sell products. So we already have a gun culture. What we don't have is a gun safety culture. We don't have a gun education culture. Instead, the education system has, the head in the sand regarding guns. Keep guns off campus. We don't want guns on campus. How does that keep those people safe when they go home and there are firearms at home or in their communities? Of course it doesn't. So we believe in education. We think that the education system in this country should re-embrace firearms and firearms education to help expose people, whether they're at home, they find a gun, whatever, heaven forbid they need to use a gun and they don't know how. So those are important issues. When it comes to state mandates for things like that and control over, curricula, obviously then there are going to be the devils in the details, right? The fact of the matter is, Greg, and you know this, I'm sure all too well, 13% or so of homicide using, by firearm involves a legal gun, 13%. The vast majority of homicide by firearm involves illegally possessed guns. So no matter what laws are passed and, measures are enacted to prevent law-abiding people from collecting the kinds of guns they want to collect, owning for self-defense so that they're not at a disadvantage if they're ever the victim of violent crime, whatever those firearms are, controlling the law-abiding public is only going to make a very small impact, if any, on gun safety in this country. But meanwhile, there are a lot of other things we can do in terms of law and order policy to help keep, violent criminals off the streets and guns out of their hands.
And then Fern, he shared a personal anecdote of the importance of teaching things like this at home early with children and getting them to, in essence, respect firearms.
Gun safety begins at home. You must develop a culture at home where children are taught how to properly use and handle a firearm. I'll give you a perfect example. We had purchased a toy firearm for my son a while back, a plastic toy. It didn't fire anything, and he'd forgotten about it. And about a year and a half later, he came to me and said, "Hey, Dad, you should do that." I said, "What's that?" He goes, "You left the firearm on the dresser." So I went running to the dresser, and I see this, and it's his toy. And he had been taught, obviously, I would never leave a firearm out in the open, but he had been taught properly what a firearm is and what isn't, and what to do and what not to do. He came to me and actually scolded me, thinking it was an actual firearm. He never even handled it to see if it was a real firearm or not. He just saw it from far away and directly came to get me and said, "Hey, Dad, you shouldn't do that," which is, that's what should happen in every home. Proper training begins at home. Mm-hmm.
We also discussed the issue of just overall gun control proposals and what some of the efforts they're seeing and how it could impact the Second Amendment and gun ownership.
Greg, I think it's just sort of common sense. Again, if you look at where some of the noteworthy mass shootings that seem to spur a lot of this political activity, where those occur, the locus of those crimes is not cowboy bars in Plano, Texas, where there's guys with a couple of sidearms and open carry and half the bars armed, right? Those happen at these soft targets. And again, targeting law-abiding people who want to protect themselves, their families, their property, and other people, other citizens that they may be in danger, is not solving the problem. It's actually contributing to it from our perspective. So we appreciate the time with you today, and we'll definitely look forward to continuing to push for common sense gun safety in America.
And then Fern sharing his final thoughts here as well on the issue of overall gun control.
Common sense legislation is always good. However, current legislation just wants to restrict. There are plenty of laws on the book. We all know that criminals do not follow these laws. They could care less about these laws. And furthermore, our criminal justice system has failed us. When these criminals are caught, they're not prosecuted. There is no liability for, you know, for these crimes. So with education, we also need to look at beefing our criminal justice system up. Educate your children how to use firearms. Educate your family properly.
So, again, appreciate both Matt and Fern for joining me from cashforarms.com. I imagine we'll connect with them again in the future here with Bishop on Air. If you got more questions for them, you can find more at cashforarms.com. So I appreciate them taking the time with us to lay out their thoughts about background checks and firearms education and gun control measures and more. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell here with Bishop on Air. Across the country, pro-Palestinian protesters blocking roadways, including in Chicago, for people trying to make flights at Chicago O'Hare International Airport. Some were late, some missed their flights entirely. Then you had tape being revealed from over the weekend in the Chicagoland area of organizers for protesters to the DNC teaching people how to chant "Death to America" and "Death to Israel" in Farsi. So what does this portend for what could happen at the Democratic National Convention come August? These issues being discussed over the past couple of days, and to give you some of that here with Bishop on Air, I'm Greg Bishop. Thanks for taking time. Like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell. So they had conversations about hate speech at the Capitol. You had conversations about squatting at the Capitol, and even back and forth from gun control groups and law enforcement groups about a measure to allow for cold cases to be reopened at the request of victims' families. But let's start with the hate speech aspect here. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Monday in Chicago was asked about, well, that morning, protesters, pro-Palestinian protesters protesting and blocking roadways.
Well, first of all, I support the idea that people should, you know, express their First Amendment rights and protest if they would like to. I do not think that they should be disruptive of the traffic of people trying to get from one place or to another. I think they can have their voices heard and let people move along their day. And I'm convinced that law enforcement ought to make sure that those byways and highways are open for people and still be respectful of those protests.
So State Representative Dan Ugaste from Geneva, if you go to thecentersquare.com/Illinois, you'll see the headline here. ADL, chance of death to America, troubling protests ahead of the DNC. So you've got State Representative Dan Ugaste, who's actually proposed to have this be illegal. You've got a statement that he released. Let me see if I can pull this up here, where he spells out that he wants this to be made illegal. So the announcement of an intention to file legislation to criminalize such activity, saying first responders should not have to face such barriers when responding to emergency calls. It's time to criminalize this activity, Ugaste said, and bring greater charges to those committing these acts, especially when putting others in harm's way. Our first responders cannot be delayed in this manner. And even to the response that the governor gave, Ugaste said that he was disappointed in that response, saying we do not have to be respectful of protesters who break the law. The governor should act swiftly and justly, sending the state police to physically remove these individuals. And it's being reported that about 40 individuals were arrested Monday. But what does this possibly mean for the DNC coming up in Chicago this August?
As you know, the state's not in charge of that permitting process. And again, I respect people's right to protest. I also respect people's right to come to the convention and be able to get where they want to go without having to be greeted with, you know, people yelling at them as they're walking to the convention hall. Having said that, again, First Amendment rights are, you know, immutable, and you know, we ought to be protecting those wherever we can.
So you also have just this past the week. Anti-Defamation League's David Goldenberg. He was at the Capitol yesterday talking about hate speech spiking quite a bit, especially anti-Semitism spiking quite a bit since the Hamas attack on Israel in October. But he also talked about those chants that were being circulated online, video showing people being trained to chant certain things.
And just this past weekend in Chicago, organizers of protests for this summer's DNC were caught on video teaching participants to chant death to Israel and death to America in Farsi. The trauma and concern in the Jewish community is palpable. I think it's problematic, right? I think that if that's what's coming... Right, those who have protested in the streets, who have led anti-Israel, anti-Zionist protests, have made abundantly clear that they're telegraphing it very clearly that the DNC is their ultimate target. Right, things like Genocide Joe and Genocide Jill, you know, categorizing them as that, refusing to meet with the administration, along those lines. Right, so. We're seeing that, we're hearing it, that organizing, while, and in a lot of the media coverage, even if you say, like, yes, you had people that were anti-capitalist or anti-whatever it was at various things this weekend, they also made it really clear that the driving force behind this organizing event was Israel-Gaza. And so if that's what's being taught, and if that's what's being encouraged, and that's what's not being categorically rejected by, like, every elected official, by every organization, like, they're calling for death of America, right?
So clearly there's ongoing concerns about what this spells out for the Democratic National Convention in Chicago this August. So we'll be watching that space. But some other things that were happening yesterday at the state capitol, you had gun control advocates there who were rallying to essentially bring about a new law that would allow for homicide cases that are cold to be brought back out. Katrina Peterson, reporter with the Center Square, talked with State Representative John Cabello, who is a current law enforcement officer and a former detective as well. And he talked about how requiring cold cases to be reopened at the request of a victim's family could run into some tough spots, especially with law enforcement that continue to be strained by increased regulations from the state government.
I understand what he's trying to do, and it's honorable what he's trying to do to help these folks that tragically lost somebody in a violent homicide. But if there's no new evidence, if there's no new information, there's nothing more for the police departments to do. I believe in the bill it says that if you have 60 homicides, you need an officer for each 60 homicides. There could be the size of Rockford. I mean, we usually have anywhere between 30 to 40 some. We could have one that's over 60. We don't have the manpower to be able to do that. I don't believe Chicago has the manpower to do this.
So clearly a lot of questions about State Representative Cam Buckner's bill to allow for cold cases to be reopened after a certain process with the victims' families involved. But law enforcement groups like the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, the Illinois Sheriff's Association, State Representative John Cabello, law enforcement officer, they're pushing back on this idea. But again, the gun control groups at the Capitol yesterday rallied with some state legislators pushing for this, like State Representative Maura Hershauer, and Katrina Peterson touched base with her about this particular bill.
That is city, suburban, rural.
Respectfully, we have heard from constituents across the state, some of them here today at this rally, who have a different experience than that, who feel left out, who feel like there is more work to be done. And I think if we can work together with law enforcement to give them the tools and the technology, a lot of times that's funding we need to work on, to make them feel as though they can provide these services for victims and their families, we'll get there. I know that Representative Buckner is working really hard on negotiations there, and I feel like we all have the same aim, which is solving crimes, interrupting the cycle of violence, and keeping our communities safe. I believe we can get there to a compromise, and we have to, because we've heard from victims across the state that unsolved homicides, not only are they painful for families, but they perpetuate the cycle of violence. So this is a huge step in ending gun violence. Absolutely not. I mean, you've heard these cold cases are from years, some of them decades ago. So, you know, we're just, you know, working together to move forward and help victims.
So that's a measure that has yet to fully advance. We'll see exactly where that goes. But gun control groups on the ground yesterday in Springfield. Tomorrow is the Illinois Gun Owner Lobby Day at the Capitol. And you're expecting to see potentially thousands of people there with the Illinois State Rifle Association and other gun rights groups. So we'll definitely be tracking that. But late yesterday in a Senate committee, something else came up that's one of those headline stories that leads to legislators trying to correct things. And it deals with squatters. State Senator Dave Severson from the Rockford area, he proposed a measure that would allow for law enforcement to have more power to, well, go after squatters. And this is, again, another story you'll be able to read at thecentersquare.com.
Stories like Susan and Joe Landa, who bought a home for their disabled son who was autistic. They were so excited, looking forward to the first time that their son was going to be able to move out and live in a home. On moving day, they went to the home, and there was someone living there. The police were called. In the end, it turned out to be a dispute, and so they had no other choice but to go home and spend thousands of dollars in the next 4 months just to try to get into their own home. In many cases, seniors who are victimized by this. So doing nothing is going to continue, or a growing number of victimizing seniors.
And this is a measure that actually passed unanimously out of that Senate committee, a Republican bill. We'll see if it advances in the Illinois Senate and gets over to the House and track that as well. This, as you had other states like Florida recently enact similar legislation. So that's just a sampling of some of the stuff you'll find at thecentersquare.com. Please go check that out. Regularly throughout the day, you'll be able to see headlines and updates of what's going on at the State House and around Illinois. Again, thecentersquare.com/Illinois, but that's not the only place we've got coverage. You can go and check out all of the other states at thecentersquare.com, including national coverage from out of Washington, D.C. All right, have yourselves a great day. Like, subscribe, hit that notification bell with Bishop on Air. I'm out of here, guys. Got to get back to the Illinois State House. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Share it up with your friends. Email me, bishoponair@gmail.com. I'll do what I can to reach back out. You guys be safe out there, all right? We'll see you back here tomorrow.